National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Lent has begun, and during this season, thousands of pilgrims will flock to Rome. There, the Pope will be on his Lenten schedule, but that does not mean that Pope Francis will stop making headlines. Now, we talk to Register Rome correspondent Edward Penton for all of the latest, and then we talk with Edward about his own journey into the Catholic faith. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Register Senior Editor Matthew Bunsen.
Good to be with you, as always.
There always seems to be news from the Vatican, especially where Pope Francis is concerned, and reporting on it is probably one of the most challenging posts in Catholic media. Fortunately for the Register and all of our readers, Edward Penton is on the job covering Pope Francis regularly and the happenings of the Vatican and the Roman Curia, all that is Rome right now. Edward is our man. And right now he's here in our studio. Edward, welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be with you in person this
time. Yes, it really is. It's always good to have a face-to-face meeting. And right now we have quite a bit to talk about. You've been working on quite a bit. This was the start of Lent. Ash Wednesday was this week. Of course, you were here with us in Birmingham. But the news continues to break from the Eternal City. What are the stories you've been working on?
Well, there was a story which I completed last week, really, about this conference that took place this week about the Pontifical Academy for mm-hmm. Sciences and Social Sciences, who held this conference, or workshop, rather, in the Academy, looking at bioextinction, the extinction of species around mm-hmm. the world, and what can be done to prevent that. It was controversial because they invited just a small number of scientists who support population control, which, of course, the Church has long condemned, although
right.
it supports responsible parenthood, but it also condemns population control. So, and one of them was Paul Ehrlich, who's a very famous advocate of that, who was very famous in the 1960s for a book he wrote called The Population Bomb. So that was that caused a lot of controversy, but at the same time, the Academy defended it quite strongly, saying that it's important. Bishop Sanchez Sorondo, who's the Chancellor of the Academy, said it was important to learn from world-renowned scientists to enable the Vatican to comment effectively on political, social, or economic policies. So he thinks it's just good to have that input from the secular world as well.
It's really a strange conference. I mean, it started February 27th. It ended March 1st. And it was in the title of this conference, How to Save the Natural World on Which We Depend, held jointly by the Pontifical Academy of Sciences and Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences. It's just a strange topic to be discussing at the Vatican. What were some of the developments of this conference? It's concluded now, so what came of it?
Well, they issued a declaration, and you can understand why the casino, the Academy, actually wanted to do it, because it is a serious issue. It's the current rate of loss of species is approximately 1,000 times the historical rate, apparently, going on, and there's going to be a real serious danger of extinction of numerous species, perhaps half of them, by the end of the century. So they're saying it's going to cause incalculable damage, and it's caused by man, mm-hmm. and so that's what they say, and so they want to find sort of ways of trying to deal with that, and one of them, they say, is to redistribute wealth better so that the poor aren't drawing on what the rich are doing and causing the disparity in the ecology, the effect mm-hmm. on the ecology that causes. So there are various arguments they put out in their final declaration. You can see why they wanted to do it. The problem is that the critics say is that the poorest are being sort of targeted here, especially in Africa, because they say the population is growing fastest there, and they feel that that's some of the professors who came were saying, that has to be tackled. And essentially they're saying that the population growth there has to be limited. So that didn't come across in the final statement, mm-hmm. But that was what a number of the participants believed, and so that's why there was that problem there. But
that's why there was controversy.
Controversy, exactly, and there's a bit of tension. Yeah,
Edward. Typically, the Pontifical Academy holds its proceedings on the grounds of the Vatican Gardens, right in the Casino of Pius IV, which is
yes.
a And this is the site of a longstanding scientific commission on the part of the Vatican. This dates back centuries, right?
Yes. Yes, it dates back to Galileo, in fact. Yes.
Yeah, who was one of the first heads of it.
That's right.
Yeah. I ask that because bringing together scientists from all over the world is obviously always a good idea. Mm. But what was striking about this was who was on the invitation list, which you just pointed out was one particularly odd invitation. Mm. But who was not allowed to attend? Talk a little bit about that.
Yes, well, there was at least two people I met in Rome who came all the way from the United States hoping to get in, not necessarily as participants, but as observers or just as journalists. And that they were not allowed. It was very close. There was no, unusually for the Academy, because usually they allow journalists in to interview people, at least in the breaks, mm-hmm. so you can talk to them. But it was completely closed. They did video it. They put the videos on their website. But unusually, it was quite restricted. And of course, people wondered why that was. And you know, if they were simply defending the church's teaching, why was there a need for the restrictions? But yeah, that was a bit odd. And I think they had two professors, John Bongartz, I think his name is, and Mattis Wackernagel. These are both belonging to population control advocacy groups. They came, they were allowed to go. But this has seems to have become a sort of common trait with the Academy, that this also happened there was a big conference about the climate change in 2015 when Ban Ki-moon, the mm-hmm. UN Secretary General, came. Again, they brooked no opposition. They didn't want any other views to be heard. And so it's the same thing here. And I think that was, again, I think controversial because of that closing down of the other argument.
Well, and you also just had a conference that ended regarding trafficking in organs. And
that's right.
Which also had some strange participants.
Yes, well, they had that one Chinese member of the Chinese government come. And he was involved, actually, in organ harvesting. At least we know that he was at some point. And critics said, in human rights groups, they were saying, we don't want this because it gives legitimacy to the regime and to that, and to organ harvesting, which goes on there among prisoners. And that's an acknowledged fact by the Chinese government. So that was another controversy. So we've had quite a few mm-hmm. Associated with the Academy up to now.
Well, let's break it down a little bit. I mean, when we talk about population control for the good of species and what do they mean? I mean, we know what people like Paul Ehrlich means, but what could be another way? How do we do this in keeping with Catholic teaching?
Well, the Church has always taught that it's not population control that needs to be enforced or mm-hmm. as made a policy. It's simply to try and bring a better redistribution of wealth to make the world a little more sustainable. Mm-hmm. The sustainability argument, as I understand it, at least in the environmentalist groups, means that they basically take the view that man is the problem. And so mm-hmm. If man is the problem, then they naturally lead to the conclusion that man, there are too many people. And so that's the way they go. Well, that's not the Church's way, and that's been condemned in many documents.
Mm-hmm. And in that final statement from this gathering, I'm assuming that Laudato Si, that the Pope's encyclical on integral ecology, loomed pretty large, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And that came, they put that in at the end of the statement. And they quoted the document saying that there has to be new ways of working together to build a sustainable, stable, and socially just world. Mm-hmm. But their final part of their declaration was just to say, to solve this common dilemma, we have to learn to love one another, to collaborate, to build bridges throughout the world to a degree that's not been imagined previously. So you mm-hmm. could argue what they're saying is that it's an emergency situation, so we have to bring in all of these people and hear
and just
from
be catalysts to some kind of solution. Is
yes.
it? Yeah. Yeah, so we invite our listeners to go to ncregister.com, the article that we're speaking of that highlights this conference at the Pontifical Academy of Sciences is Population Control Advocates, Vatican appearance draws criticism. So I suggest that our listeners go to this article and take a deeper look at what we're talking about here. But there was also, Edward, another piece that you had written this week. It was an interview with Cardinal Coco Palmerio. Why was that interview important?
Well, Cardinal Coco Palmerio is the head of the Vatican Dicastery, which interprets the Church's legal documents. It's the Pontifical Council for Legislative Texts. And he is one of the top canonists in mm-hmm. the Church. And he wanted to write this very little document, booklet, about the way trying to help people understand the most controversial aspect of Amoris Laetitia, Pope Francis's apostolic exhortation on the family. And so he wrote this short document. Really, that chapter focuses mostly on Holy Communion for the divorced and remarried.
We're talking about chapter 8, right?
Chapter 8, right. Yes. And so he wanted to just share his thoughts in an effort really to help people understand what the document was really saying. So that was controversial in itself, because his main point in that document was to say that remarried divorcees can receive the sacraments if they desire to change their sinful situation, but cannot amend it because doing so would lead to further sin. And he argued that that was fully in line with the Church's teaching, but that's, critics will say that's a break with it.
Right. Right. Now, I guess a couple of things that struck me from the interview. One, you did ask if the Holy Father had read the booklet before the publication, before it was published, and he said no.
No. But he did say, interestingly, that he was of the same mind as Cardinal Coco Palmerio during the synods. So
that's
right. You could argue that this, even though he didn't see it before, he approves of it.
Right, and the Cardinal Coco Palmerio did mention that in the interview, that
yes.
we are of the same mind.
That's right.
And the Holy Father. Mm. The other thing that it was clear, at least maybe not in this interview, but I think when he had others do a press conference for him
yeah.
and the book, that it he was not speaking for in his official position at the Vatican, and we've seen this happen quite a bit lately with Cardinal Mueller, who has spoken in interviews about Amoris Laetitia, but has not spoken on the record from his place as the prefect of the Congregation for Doctrine of Faith, and now this is happening again. So it's
and notably, Cardinal Mueller was coming from the position that you have to interpret Amoris Laetitia from the position of continuity.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is what critics are saying is the problem, because you're not getting a central line, you're getting various interpretations.
Mm-hmm.
And these different interpretations from officials, they're trying to sort of get around that by saying, well, I'm not speaking officially, I'm giving my own personal interpretation and reflection. But in a sense, that, you know, that may not help either. So critics will say it all adds to the confusion. But
and in fact, I mean, you asked Cardinal Coco Palmerio that very question. You know, there are other various interpretations, and his answer was, yes, there are, basically.
Yes, yes.
And but he did kind of claim the more human way of looking at it, which was an interesting consideration.
Mm.
It's a fascinating interview. It doesn't necessarily add a lot of clarity to the situation, but it certainly points very clearly how some at the Vatican, perhaps many, are looking at this issue.
I will just say that one interesting aspect, which didn't perhaps come over in the printed text, is that he was very very meek about it, very very gentle about just getting his point across, whereas in contrast to what you've heard from others who are pushing that same line, they tend to be quite aggressive, they don't really brook any opposition. He was very much very, very placid about it, and very calm, and a true believer, I think, about what he really wrote.
Yeah. Right, sincere about it. Yeah.
Very sincere.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because actually when I read it, this interview was conducted in Italian, as many of your interviews are. This interview was conducted in Italian, and it's funny, when you read his responses, he says to himself, he says to you, do you understand, or you see?
Mm.
And it's so funny, because when you read it, it's like, come on, do you get it?
Yeah, yes.
And that's the way it is in Italian. I mean, they often check to make sure you're following.
It is,
but
especially
it's not
if you're
negative.
Not a native speaker,
right.
and I think he just wanted to be sure that I was following. But
it's
no, he was. It was interesting to talk to him. He was.
And that other memorable line when you reference a couple of the canons, and he says, "I know them all by heart."
That's right. Yes. Which he would as a canonist.
Of course, yeah. It's always interesting, Edward, you know, when we have you in studio here, to see you face-to-face and to have this kind of conversation face-to-face like this. And I have to remember this is how you're talking to many people there. And so we read it on the page, and we don't get the same kind of personal experience that you have when you're talking to the people. So I appreciate that you've brought that forward and kind of remind us of the human contact that you have when you talk to the people you bring to our pages. We're going to pause for a little break, and we'll pick up this conversation when we come back. Our conversation here with Edward Penton, the Register's Rome correspondent, and we're going to talk a little bit about his own journey to Catholicism, as well as what's happening in Rome during Lent. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, here with Matthew Bunsen, Register Senior Editor. And we are continuing a conversation in studio with Edward Penton, our Rome correspondent. Edward, of course, Lent has started, and you're here in Birmingham. But Pope Francis is still in Rome, and he's got quite a schedule for Lent. What can we anticipate?
Well, the main thing, of course, is he goes on a retreat every year with the members of the Curia. And this year it's from March the 5th until the 10th, and he's going to Ariccia. He's always gone out of Rome for this. That's not usually what happened. It used to be in the Vatican. He's taking the Curia out of Rome to this place called Ariccia, which is near Castel Gandolfo, near this old Pope's summer residence, about 20 miles southeast of Rome. Mm-hmm.
Which he actually never goes to during the summer.
He doesn't actually go anymore there, no. So he's going to a retreat center there run by the Pauline Fathers. It's going to be led by a Father Giulio Michelini, who's a Franciscan biblical scholar. And he's going to lead the meditations on the Gospel of Matthew's description of the passion, death, and resurrection of Jesus. That'll be for that. Then I think the rest, just various engagements, and then, of course, the busy Easter season, which begins early next month.
Yeah. For those who may not be familiar, we hear the phrase that the Pope is going on retreat with the Curia. Mm. What does that mean? Who from the Curia actually goes on the retreat?
Well, it's all the heads of the dicastery, so the cardinals and bishops who head the various Vatican departments.
So it's not
it's not all the officials.
All the minutanti and the...
No.
Okay.
I don't think it includes all. I mean, I think just the top rungs, yeah.
Okay. Go.
Yeah, yeah. But, it's an interesting time. I think he appreciates it very much, that time of retreat.
There are various things going on in Rome during Lent. Are there extra things that, you know, it'd be interesting for our audience to know about what happens in Rome in general during Lent? How does it appear? Yeah. Is it that might be different from what our ordinary experience
would
be?
Well, the great highlight for most people living in Rome is the station churches.
Yes.
And being able to go to all of these various station churches around Rome. Every day there's a different one.
That's right.
So it's a great way to see all the beautiful churches in Rome. Mm-hmm.
I have such fond memories of doing that
yes.
in my time in Rome. And, of course, George Weigel wrote a beautiful book about that and with beautiful pictures that his son took. And
some churches. Catholics may not be familiar. When you say station churches, what do you mean exactly?
They're the ones, I think, which have the greatest historical significance during Easter.
Many of the oldest churches.
The oldest churches, yes. And then, of course, the patriarchal basilicas, the five ones. I can't remember them all. But of course, the big ones like St. John Lateran, St. Mary Major, and so forth, and St. Peter's. But
St. Paul's and all.
Yes, yeah. So it's a beautiful thing to do. Of course, the North American College leads it very much, and the seminarians go to each one. They take the buses out and go every morning.
Absolutely. Yeah. And back when I was there many years ago, we were walking along with the North American College seminarians. We would walk from various places in Rome to these station churches. The mass was usually like 7 a.m.
Yeah,
in English. And they would have all of the relics of the churches, those particular churches out that day. And so you could venerate the relics. And it was nice. As a student living in Rome, it was nice because we would get an English homily.
That's right.
And you don't get that often living in Rome. So that, very fond memories. That's a great thing to remember.
Do you remember, Edward, the first time that you went to Rome?
Went to Rome? Yep. Yes, I do. I do, back in 2002 in July. Yeah.
Were you there as a pilgrim?
I was there to go to an interview with Vatican Radio, in fact. Which is when I started there.
That's how it all began.
That's how it all began. That's right.
And I guess it wasn't too long after that you started working with the Register as well, huh?
That's right. A couple of years later, yeah.
Well, Edward, you have a great story that I didn't know until this week, this time with you, about your own conversion. You're a convert to Catholicism. How did it all begin?
Well, it began after university. I just began searching my own personal search. I was brought up Anglican in Canterbury, so the head of the sort of Church of England
there.
And I was searching, and then I went to, I got an opportunity to go to teach in Tanzania. Mm-hmm. So I went out there to teach with German Benedictine monks, missionary monks out there, who'd been there for 100 years or so. And I found that a very life-changing experience. I had a lot of chance to read great books from great Catholic authors, and it had a very much an effect on me, and just the people there too, the strength of faith of the people, the belief in, even if it weren't necessarily Catholic, a sense of the transcendence, which unfortunately we've lost in Europe, and that when I came back just made me want to search more, and I felt very drawn to the Catholic Church, and I felt that if you're going to be Christian, I think you want to be in the true church, and it always felt to me to be the true church, not the Anglican church, which has its great aspects, but it isn't the true church as the Catholic is.
You mentioned great books and the things you were able to read and reflect upon during that time of service, because essentially it was a time of pouring yourself out, as you put it to me earlier this week, which is a beautiful way to put it. You know, in that service you poured yourself out and you got closer to the Lord in doing so.
That's right.
But aside from the service, what did you read? What are some of the things? Is there something particular that you remember?
I remember a good book out there I read, which was great English Catholic authors or literature, and so it included, you know, Chesterton, and not only Catholic, there was also C.S. Lewis in there, there was Tolkien, and they were just little excerpts of their books, but very spiritual, and I remember that was very significant.
It's a bit like that book was waiting for you.
Yes, it was. It's rather providential, yeah. And there were other books, too, of old homilies that priests had given, and I read through those, and I just found them very, very persuasive, very strong, and I think Chesterton, a lot of Chesterton there, and Father Brown books and so forth,
yes.
So it was all very good.
You know, now you're actually, you know, at such a different area, a stage of your life, you know. The work that you do is profound. Our listeners are always letting us know how grateful they are for your work. But it's a tough place to work. Seeing anything when you're covering any entity with such a magnifying glass, you can be disillusioned. And you're covering the church with a magnifying glass, if you will. Mm. How do you keep yourself grounded in your faith?
Well, I think I've been blessed really to always realize that the church, I think coming as a convert, one's realized what the church really gives to you, because I lived for the first 25 years of my life without the church, and then you realize that the sacraments are key and that those are incorruptible, and whatever goes on in the church, whatever human mess that is created, the church itself is incorruptible and pure,
right.
And that keeps my faith going, and Christ never changes in that sense. He's always the anchor and the one to look to, and not really what's going on in the church. So that is important to know. So that keeps me going. Yep.
And, you know, being here with you this week, as we go on a retreat together, as we start Lent, I can see your faith. I can see your joy. I can see your hope. And I'm so appreciative of that. So, Edward, thank you for all that you do for the Register.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
And know that we and all of our listeners have you in our prayers.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. For much more news, analysis, and commentary on the church and the major events of the day, remember to go to ncregister.com. For my co-host, Matthew Bunsen, our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.